What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Ugh. You said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope. But I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Tires matter. They're the only part of your vehicle that touches the road. Tread confidently with new tires from Tire Rack. Whether you're looking for expert recommendations or know exactly what you want, Tire Rack makes it easy. Fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, and convenient installation options. Go to TireRack.com to see tire test results, tire ratings, and consumer reviews, and be sure to check out all the special offers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
All right, everybody. Today, I had a guy cancel on me. And so, like I always do when I have a cancellation and I need to get a podcast thrown together, I go to social media and I throw a bait out in the water and I say, who wants to come on? And today's guest bit it. I reeled him in. And now we're going to talk about hunting gear and equipment from Michigan, Mr. Adam Melcheff. Adam, how are we doing, dude?
I'm doing good this morning, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Okay. First off, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to do this. It is, like you said, what'd you say? Today's a snow day where you live?
Yeah, we got like 5 or 6 inches of snow overnight and the wind's blowing like 30, 40 miles an hour. And yeah, kids didn't have school today. So I'm being Mr. Mom slash Dad working from home today. And the kids are a little older, but yeah, just sitting around the house today. So
they can wipe their butts and get themselves their own drinks.
Absolutely. Yes.
out of curiosity, how old are they?
They're 14 and 11.
Oh, okay. So they're almost fully functional.
It depends on the day.
Love it.
Mm. In theory, they should be. They just require a whole lot more food now.
Yeah, that's right. Dude, and I'm telling you right now, I'm starting to get scared at what my grocery bills are going to be in 5 years when my sons actually start doing hard practices for sports and they start to hit puberty and they start to, dude, my youngest son would, if we had a trough of food sitting out all day, he would just sit there and eat and eat and eat. And he's not, it's not like he's fat or getting bigger. So it's just burnt.
Yeah. It's, we're the same way. Both my boys are huge athletes and we do about every sport known to man, but we do a lot of travel soccer and we're in basketball season right now.
Yep.
And my oldest works out quite a bit too. And like I'll smoke like 5 pounds of jerky almost every week, you know, just to kind of have like a healthier substitute, you know, for a snack, you know, around. And like they decimate it in like 2 days.
Right. Right. Yeah. We like recently we've had to really, I don't know, I was really kind of impacted on, I listened to a podcast about like health podcast from some doctor who kind of broke away from being a doctor because, you know, doctors don't do too terribly much other than prescribe medication. Like they, no one ever says, hey, you're have these heart problems because you eat like shit and you're inactive and that's why you're fat and fat leads to, you know, all these comorbidities or whatever the case is. So we've really started to eat healthy, a lot more meats, which I'm able to provide some of that, you know, through, you know, through hunting and then eggs. And, but I'll tell you this right now, eating healthy is very expensive. And so we eat like between my wife, my kids, and myself, we go through damn near 70 eggs throughout the course of a week. You know what I mean? And that's ridiculous.
Some chickens.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, cool, man. How did your season go this year so far?
You know what? I've had a really fun season. Both of my sons love hunting and fishing, you know, and my youngest son shot his first buck in archery season. So that was really neat. And I was sitting with him to see that. And then I live in southern Michigan. We have a very healthy deer population. And we've got 8 does down so far. So it's been a really good season. Me personally, hasn't been a great like big buck season or even like mature deer season. We probably had a little CWD come through our area this year. We were really dry this like late summer and early fall. I haven't seen that yet necessarily on the farm. I'm sure during shed season we'll kind of, you know, maybe find some of those bigger, older deer, maybe dead that we thought were going to be alive. I've just had a fun season with the kids. It's been fun watching them just have a blast shooting deer. We process them in my garage, you know, and they get to be a part of that. So, you know, that's worth it to me. There's always more time to go shoot big deer.
Yeah. All right. This kind of leads into the next question. On average, with your kids, without your kids, solo, whatever you do, how many days out of the year, and that can be between turkey hunting and deer hunting or whatever you do, how many days out of the year do you hunt on average?
Oh, man. You know, I would say, you know, it's probably close to 30 would be my guess.
And does that includes like turkey season, deer season, do you take any out of state trips, anything like that?
Yeah. So, we do turkey in the spring. You know, so that's probably 4 or 5 days of turkey hunting.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it was more, but like we talked about, kids' sports schedules get in the way of turkey hunting on the weekends pretty well.
Yeah.
And then, I did not do a Western trip this year. I usually do a Western trip every other year. And this is kind of my my off year. I did a big Alaska trip 2 years ago. My wife asked if I could take a year off from spending 2 weeks away from the family. But just a lot of deer hunting this year. I hunt a property in Illinois that I go back to every fall during the rut, you know, and kind of do a rutcation week-long hunt, and then just do a lot of local hunting here in Michigan.
Okay. So would you say that 30 days throughout the entire year, and I've been out of the corporate world, the working class. Well, you know, I consider myself a working man because I have a job and I have two businesses that I run, but I'm removed from the normal employment where you have to be somewhere at some time every day, 5 days a week. Like I've been removed from that. Right. And yep. So would you say 30 days out of a year is a average, in your opinion, average, above average for the average hunter across the country?
That's probably above average, I would guess. You know, I'm in a similar place to you where I have the ability to work remotely, you know, and I somewhat make up my own schedule.
Gotcha.
I work in the sales world, so as long as you know, as long as I'm doing what I need to do, you know, for work, things are fine. They don't care where I am. So
yeah, that's funny you say that because I know a lot of guys who term money walks bullshit or talks or money talks bullshit walks.
Yeah.
And so if you're bringing in money, people typically don't care how you're doing it. As long as the money's coming in, then you're kind of safe in your job. And
yeah,
my wife has a position where she is one of those, she has like 16 years in the same job.
Yeah.
And everybody in the company comes to her and says, hey, what about this? What about this? Not only from her experience, but the relationships that she's built within her company and with clients outside of her company. And she's a marketing, senior marketing coordinator for an architecture company. And she's okay. responsible for like putting together proposals of what, like when they bid jobs, she is responsible for putting the proposals together and then making sure that they hit a deadline of when those proposals are needed. Anyway,
sure.
16 years of experience. She knows everything and people come to her and she works from home too. And yeah. she's allowed to have a very flexible schedule because of her knowledge and yeah. what she does. And so
that's how it should be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I worked in the hunting industry for years.
Yeah.
And you know, all of my friends and just people I'd meet, you know, thought, oh, that must be awesome. You get to hunt all the time, you know, and I hunt way more working out of the industry than I ever did in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of interesting also.
Yeah. And what did you say you worked for? What company?
I was a sales rep for Browning and Winchester.
And are they based out of Michigan too?
No. I was just an on the road.
Gotcha.
I was actually living in Iowa, and so I had a territory in the Midwest I covered for them.
Gotcha. All right, let's talk hunting. 30 days in the field throughout the entire seasons. Turkey, Western trip. Then you have your whitetail, resident and local type hunts that you go on off and on throughout. You know, every other year or whatever. All of those require different gear.
Yeah.
Okay. So when Adam is sitting in front of his computer or he's standing in Bass Pro Shop or wherever you do your shopping, what calculations are going on through your brain about what products you purchased, how you purchased them, what is needed versus what is wanted? Like, talk to me about your thought process behind hunting gear purchases.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a little different now than it used to be probably, especially with kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of have almost everything, you know, but I want my kids to also like have to like trial and error a little bit, like maybe all of us did growing up,
mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, I'll go out and buy, you know, some of the newer products that come out every year, whether it's a, you know, a turkey call or it's a new grunt tube or, you know, some type of scent elimination thing, whatever the case is, you know, to just kind of have my boys kind of get through it a little bit, you know, and see what, you know, I think it's interesting to run those things past them too and see their thoughts on it. You know, they don't know the world kind of like we do, but for me personally now, like, I hunt a lot of days, but usually they're in pretty big chunks, you know? Mm-hmm. So like I go for a week to Illinois, or I go a week to Colorado, or 2 weeks, you know, to Alaska or something like that. So when I go, it's usually, you know, a pretty hardcore trip.
Yeah.
I base a lot of that on comfort, you know, clothing wise, you know, hey, like what's going to keep me warm? What's going to keep me dry? What's going to keep me comfortable so that when I'm somewhere for, you know, 5 to 7 days, I never am, you know, in the spot where I feel like, hey, it's just too cold to go outside, you know, and sit in a tree, or I'm going to be too wet, or, you know, I don't have the right boots. So most of those things are covered on like, hey, do I need something very technical for maybe a new hunt I'm going on? Or, you know, is there a new piece of gear out that's going to maybe keep me a little bit warmer or a little bit drier on the next hunt?
Yeah, I can 100% agree. When I go, it's almost easier for me to go in big chunks of time than it is to...
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Like me away from the house, 100% of the hunt is a much better for me because I can dedicate strict amount of time to the hunt, as opposed to if I'm here at home, there's going to be a chance where my wife is like, hey, listen, can you do this instead? Can you do this instead? Or I will feel obligated to go do something instead of hunt. And so it's almost harder for me to go and hunt locally where I live, as opposed to just saying, hey, listen, here's the dates I'm going to be gone. And while I'm gone, I'm going to be 100% in the game, as opposed to at home where, you know, like, hey, we got a missed car ride. Someone's going to be late for something, this and that. And then you feel like you're not really a part of that. Although there is times where I wish I had a piece real close to home where I could, you know, pop out, take the kids out for a youth hunt or something like that. But I'm in the same boat as you as far as big chunks of time, things like that. So just out of curiosity, what do you think the difference is in gear when you live that type of hunting lifestyle as opposed to just hunting locally? And, you know, maybe it's still 30 days throughout the entire course of the year, but it's not in big chunks. Is there a difference in gear that is needed, do you think?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, like on the warmth side of things, right? Like if I was just going to go, you know, 15 miles down the road and hunt for the day, like for some reason, if I forgot something and I was too cold, like I could just run home after my morning hunt, grab it, you know, and go back where, you know, 2 years ago, I was on an elk hunt in Colorado and like, you know, we didn't have cell service, you know, or anything like that. We're out in the middle of nowhere. And like, you know, we went to bed one night and it was cold out, but there was no snow on the ground. And then we woke up in the morning and there was like almost 3 feet of snow on the ground.
Wowzers.
So, you know, like if you didn't have, you know, some warmer type clothing on you, you know, or something that you could kind of adapt to those elements, like you'd be screwed.
So. Yeah. So it's like when you do leave, and you're going somewhere, you have to be prepared for any and everything. And that's same thing. Like whenever I do hunt locally, I'm going bare minimum stuff in my truck, right?
Yeah.
But when I was out in South Dakota, or when I went to Kansas this year, I was loaded with gear. Like there was not like my front, you know, my front seat, my back seat, and then the entire bed of the truck. I bring everything just in case, because I learned my lesson the first time that I went to where was I? I went to Idaho on the elk hunt, and I tried to pack minimalistic because I was influenced by guys living this minimal hunt, minimal gear, ounce counting type shit. And I said, that's going to be me too. And then I got out there. I was like, holy shit, I'm cold. I'm wet. I don't have enough socks. I wasn't prepared because I'd never done this. And so, I definitely needed more gear at that point.
Yeah.
So when it comes to purchasing, then, like, obviously, you have a variety of options and you hunt a variety of species throughout the course of a year. When you're pulling the trigger on a purchase, what categories are you thinking about to, you know, when you're weighing your options, what categories are you thinking about?
Yeah. So like most of my gear purchases now, are kind of based on, whether it's a new species, but like lots of times they're new and upcoming trips that, you know, maybe I don't do all the time, you know, like my whitetail gear, like I've got that pretty dialed in, you know, I feel like I've got my early season kit in my mid season, in my late season. And, you know, I really don't need to add anything new to that unless for some reason, you get a big hole in your coat or something like that and you have to replace something like that. But, I went on an elk hunt 2 years ago, and it was really cold. My gear was fine. One of the things I noticed though was like, hey, I'm probably due to buy a better sleeping bag, that would keep me a little bit warmer. And then B, maybe not necessarily lighter, but would pack better in my, in my big, kind of mountain pack that I took. I just kind of noticed mine compared to a couple of guys I went with just took up a whole lot more space in my bag. And when you're packing in for a week, like you only have so much space, If I could gain, a couple more inches in my bag to pack, whatever that's going to be, maybe more food, maybe an extra pair of socks, maybe it's like your comfy pillow from home instead of, sleeping on like a, an air pillow or something like that. So, like a tent was another one. Like, hey, I've got an okay tent, but like similar to my sleeping bag, like my sleeping bag's probably 15 years old. My tent's probably 10 to 15 years old. In that time, with just technology, like we're making them where they're more durable, they're warmer, they're lighter, and they pack better.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's a fact. One of the most expensive purchases I've ever made for, I'm going to put it under the category of hunting gear because that's when I use it, is my Western Mountaineering backpack, or excuse me, sleeping bag, made in America. Badass, when you talk to the guy and he's like, yeah, honestly, if you buy this, you're probably never going to need another one if you take care of it. Yeah. And so that was $650.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, And so a lot of people are like, holy shit, that's expensive. I can't afford it. But when you have it for 20 years, and that's my goal, is to have it for 20 years. It's my cold weather sleeping bag. I got a warm weather sleeping bag as well that I use. Both pack down extremely tight and they don't take up too much room in the pack when I'm packing in to go do my backcountry hunt. So,
yeah.
So that kind of leads me to Before we go any further on price and budget, I do have to do a couple commercials here real quick, just because I forgot to do them earlier.
no problem.
And so the first one is Reveal trail cameras. Do you use cell cams at all?
I've got 8 of those Reveal cameras.
So. Oh, you do? And so yep. Far, do you like them?
I do. That, you know, they've, I don't know if they've changed the way I hunt, but they change the way I, you know, I kind of navigate my properties now. You know, yeah. I go to Illinois. I have a property in Illinois I hunt, you know, so I can keep tabs on what's happening there when I'm 3-4 states away.
Right. Right.
You know, which is nice. And then even my local ones here, like, you know, you can, the biggest thing I think's nice is I can go put those trail cameras early in the season, you know, deep into a bedding area that I would never want to go walk through, you know, right. during the season, and just let it go. Yep. And like battery life's been good. You know, they've been great. So,
yeah. Yeah. Good. You did the commercial right there. I don't need to say anything more about Reveal trail cameras. Go to tacticam.com and check out the new 3.0 versions. Next on the list, and this is the last one, is Code Blue Sense. They have real synthetic deer urines. I am a huge fan of their Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit. And the cool thing about that is, what was it? Let's see. Today is, we're recording this on a Thursday. It would have been Tuesday of this week. I had 2 big bucks, December, right? But 2 big bucks go and lay a scrape right in front of my cell cam and my mock scrape kit. So they're out there still doing the thing a little bit, but I just love having that. Code Blue Sense also offers like laundry detergents, body washes, and all that kind of stuff. So codebluesense.com. I do have a discount code, NFC20, for 20% off. Now, we've got the commercials out of the way. Money, right? It is the ultimate decision maker for most people, all right? Some new bows are, I looked at the new bow that I've kind of been researching, but I never really looked at what the price is for it. $1,400. Holy shit. Okay, flagship bow, a lot of money. You can go as high as you want in the hunting world, and you can go Walmart style, you know, cotton tee with a real tree printed on it type scenario as well, right?
Yep.
Everybody's got different budgets. As far as where you stand, right, because it sounds like you hunt, you know, obviously you hunt 30 days, multiple species, multiple kids who are also into hunting, and some of that budget probably goes to them as well. What is your budget? How do you juggle price? Is price important when you are making purchases for hunting gear?
I mean, it's definitely important, right? I mean, just because, you know, I think I'm like a lot of people out there. Like, I just don't have endless amounts of money, you know, to spend on gear. I've got to save, and I've got a budget for it, you know, and we all like to buy gear, you know, but sometimes you have to save money, you know, for the tags, you know, to go out west, you know, let alone, you know, buy the gear. So, that being said, I mean, I, you know, most of my gear would be on, you know, price wise would be on the upper end. Mm-hmm. I've kind of learned throughout the years also, like, buy once, cry once, you know, type deal.
Heard that before.
Generally with the better gear, it lasts longer. And definitely if you take care of it, right? And I know some guys that just don't take care of their gear at all. It wouldn't matter if they were buying Walmart camo or, you know, the top end stuff. Like, if you just, you know, if you let it sit out in your garage and let your dog lay on it, you know, like, it wouldn't matter. But,
right.
You know, I like my bow. No, I'm shooting like a 4 or 5 year old Matthews right now.
Yeah.
I like it. I have a lot of confidence in it. Generally what I do, like, you know, every 2 years or so, when I kind of get that itch, you know, when that new bow comes out, seems like all the archery companies, you know, have just been unveiling their new flagship bows here in the last several weeks. I'll take my current bow down to my pro shop and shoot it alongside, you know, the brand new one that's coming out that I'm interested in. And, you know, I've had plenty of times where I'm like, man, there's no difference, you know. Yeah. I mean, Maybe the new bow is a couple feet, you know, per second faster. You know, maybe it's a tad bit lighter, but, you know, this bow's been good to me. And then seems like about every 4 or 5 years, then I'll go down there and I'll be like, okay, now I see a noticeable difference enough that, you know, I'm going to kind of reinvest again, you know, into buying, you know, the new flagship bow for whatever company that is.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that, I mean, that is such an excellent point, because a lot of people, when they go bow shopping, they just go in and they're looking for new bows. They don't take what they currently have and use it as kind of a reference point where they're like, is this bow that I'm about to drop this coin on so much better than what I'm currently shooting?
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, you know, if you have your bow properly tuned and you go shoot another properly tuned bow, man, on paper, a lot of these bows are the same. It's just minuscule improvements every year. Yeah. So when I bought my first bow with my own money in 2006, it was a Bowtech Tribute, I believe it was.
Okay.
And I was shooting like this, I don't even know, like Bear or Browning that I got when I was 16. So that would have been 96, 10 years, a 10-year-old bow. And it was older. Yeah, I got it in 1996, and or something, maybe even earlier, but it was already 15 years old. And then when I got my brand new bow, the jump was so huge. I was like, this is awesome. Like, but now every year I shoot, you know, I shoot some of the flagship bows and even non-flagship bows from bigger, smaller brands. And the jumps, when I do that, the jump isn't there like what it was back in the day. So technology is just getting more refined and more refined. And I'm sure there's some – here's what I've learned about bows. And you can tell me what your thoughts are. I am a longer axle-to-axle guy. Like 30 for me is too short as far as axle-to-axle. I found my sweet spot is 32, 33, maybe even 34 axle to axle. And that is, I feel, my sweet spot with a 30-inch draw. And I don't know. What about you?
I would agree with you. Like, I've shot some, like, 33-inch axle bows, you know, that definitely, like, you know, and especially if you put a little bit of weight on a stabilizer out in front of it, like, those things hold so nice, you know. I used to do a little bit, you know, of some like 3D tournament stuff, not like professionally, just like going on the weekends to different places, you know. And I mean, those bows were nice for that. For hunting, I found, like, and especially since I started going out west, I've never taken a longer bow, I guess, out west, so I wouldn't know this for sure, but I know, like, even I think my current bow I'm shooting now is 29 and a half or 30 inch axle to axle. Like, I don't think I'd want to get any bigger necessarily. It's just like when you're climbing around on the mountain, like, I mean, I've like, you know, tree stand hunting's different, I think, a little bit. Like, you know, like if you're just tree stand hunting, like, you're not really banging your bow around a whole lot. You know, you just kind of from the truck walk into the tree, you know.
You obviously have never seen. You have obviously never seen me walk into the woods. I'm like a freaking Sasquatch. I'm like that coal miner who has all the tin cans and pots around his belt and on his backpack. Man, I'm so loud. It sucks.
But, like, I know, like, climbing around out west, like, I mean, I've hit my cam and my limb on, you know, everything known to man out there. Like, you want to den up a bow, you know, go climb around the mountain for a week. You'll put some nicks and scrapes on it pretty quick.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. Yeah. And I didn't even want to get a new bow this year, but I don't know if you know, I know I've told this story on this podcast and on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, but I was up in my office. I heard some basketballs dribbling down in my garage this summer. And it's like two or three weeks before my first hunt. And I hear a crash. I go downstairs to see what it was. My bow is on the ground. Oh, and the basketball's rolling out of the garage. There's no kids to be found. And so I'm just like, Jesus. So I started shooting it, and I had a huge, huge problem. I had to go get my rest recentered. I bought a new sight because the sight circle was like an oval now. Oh, geez. And things just did not go right, and I was extremely frustrated. And I still think today that there's something wrong with the bow.
Yeah.
I shot it. I don't think I had any issues with my Kansas buck because I shot it at 10 yards.
Yeah.
And it's hard to miss at that, you know, at that. But long story short, I struggled this year trying to get accuracy after that.
And man, so, and I don't know if this had anything to do with it, but like bows in my mind also, like there's such a mental aspect to shooting bows, right? Like in confidence. And this has been several years ago, but I was shooting in a 3D tournament one day, and you know, you're just shooting a ton of arrows, and I wasn't paying attention, and I didn't load an arrow.
And I've been there, dude.
And and I shot at a target, and luckily the bow didn't blow up, but I bent a cam, so I had to go get a new cam, put on there. And I never shot that bow good again. I tried for a year, and I eventually sold it and just got something else because I know it was 100% mental, like in my mind, I still had a broken cam on there, and I just couldn't get over it. So
I feel you, man. I've done that before, and I did it in front of people at a sporting goods store. So I had my own bow, and I drew it back, and I let one fly. Oh, guess what? I didn't let one fly because there was no arrow in it, and it exploded. The cable slapped me in the wrist and across the face, and I had wounds, and I was like, Jesus. So there's that.
Yeah. Happens to the best of us.
Yeah, right. So cry once, buy once. Like, what type of products in your opinion, are worthy of the cry once, buy once mentality?
Clothing for sure. Mm-hmm. I've just found the better clothing, it seems to hold up longer. Mm-hmm. And then it tends to keep you warmer. I think, the better clothing companies also, like, they've done a really good job, and maybe it's just marketing, maybe it isn't, but you can build out your kit so well with, mm-hmm. With four or five different pieces. And they all work really well together. You can take them, based on temperature, not wear one, compared to another, but, clothing for sure. I mean, that's changed the game for me as compared to like what I had 20 years ago to compared what I have today. Like, 20 years ago, to do an all day sit in cold weather, I would have never even really thought about it. I'd have been like, hey, I gotta come in, and warm up for a couple hours, where now it's like, it's not like maybe super enjoyable, to be sitting out in the snow or the rain, but I don't feel like, I can't feel my toes or my hands, and that if a deer came in, there's no way I'd be able to shoot them, So.
Right. Right. 100% agree. Yeah. Clothing, obviously. And I think when you do a lot of research, that plays into it. Like, I got gear now that's going to last me a while until I do something to screw it up. Right. Yeah. Whether I cross a barbed wire fence,
right.
Or, I slip out of my tree stand like I did in Kansas and ripped my pants all up and things like that. Yeah. But, clothing is so important. Boots and socks, I'll throw, that kind of go into that category as well, where I'm like, and even I'll take it an extra step into the clothing. I will pay more for good base layers.
Oh yeah.
And then go cheap, or I don't want to say cheap, but spend less money on the outer shell of things.
I 100% agree with you. I went on an elk hunt a couple years ago, and a guy that I took You know, he was just like your typical gun deer hunter here, you know, just doesn't bow hunt, gun hunts, you know, 3 or 4 days a year. And honestly, like, would probably be fine wearing a pair of coveralls, you know, out to the stand, you know, but he always wanted to go on an elk hunt. And I said, all right, well, hey, you're going to have to invest some money in some clothing. And when I sent him, you know, my recommendations for base layers, you know, it was several hundred dollars, you know, into base layers. And he called me and he was like, dude, you gotta be kidding me. Like, why would I spend this much money for long johns? You know? Yeah. And I'm like, dude, these, like, out of anything I'm telling you to buy today, these base layers will be the one thing at the end of this trip where you'll tell me, hey, I'm really glad I bought those.
Yeah.
And ever since then, now he's like, he's got two brothers. He's bought them those same things for Christmas, you know, for them. And like, yeah, base layers are where it at, you know, real, I mean, to keep you warm. And then also when it's really warm, you know, to wick the sweat off of you. So,
yeah, I'll say this, base layers. I did my first out of state, my first elk hunt in Idaho, and it was extremely cold in the mornings and even a little wet some of the hunts, and then way warmer in the afternoons. Okay. And so these base layers helped regulate my body temperature. They would have if I had them, but that first hunt. So basically I got to feel what an elk hunt was like without proper clothing, gear, and equipment. And it sucked. I had,
I bet it did.
I had good socks. I had a decent pair of boots. I had shit base layers, and that was really it, man. They sucked. And the next time I went to Colorado for an elk hunt, I had much better equipment. And like always, if you're not thinking about your equipment, then you know you have the right equipment.
Yeah.
So, yep. Any products that you're okay with them? I don't want to say being disposable, but you're okay with spending less money on.
You know, that's somewhat dependent on where you hunt. I would say a little bit. You know, optics might be one. Like, now that being said, like I've got some higher end optics, which I absolutely love. Like, but like, if you go out west and you're going to sit behind a pair of binoculars for 8 to 10 hours a day, that's different than when, if you just, you know, sitting in your tree stand, you know, and, you know, in the woods, and you're going to use a pair of binoculars, you know, a couple times a day, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I own a very expensive set of binoculars, you know, that I went out west one time and I had a pair of, you know, $200 binoculars that, you know, were okay, you know, but after, you know, glassing, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours a day, you know, it seemed like, out west, like, I mean, my eyes hurt by the end of the day. They hurt. You know?
Yeah.
And then after using, you know, a friend's set, like the next day, it was a night and day difference, you know? You know, but now if you're a tree stand hunter in Michigan, that, you know, you're really not going to sit behind a pair of binoculars, you know, hardly ever, you know, can you get away with a $100 to $200 pair of binoculars? Probably so.
Yeah, they definitely don't need to be. And I think what you're going after also matters. But for me, when I went to South Dakota this year, I took my spotting scope in with me. Excellent spotting scope from Vortex. Did its job, did exactly what it was supposed to do, high quality glass. But at the same time, I knew I wasn't looking for giants. I was looking for any legal deer. And so I could identify that with my binoculars. So I just stopped taking my spotting scope into the backcountry with me. And so
I'm the same way. I, you know, when I go out west, like, sure, I'm like everyone else, right? I'd love to shoot a 300-inch bull, you know, with my bow. That'd be awesome. But Most of the time, you know, I'm hunting over-the-counter units, you know, with a bunch of other people on public land. And really, the reality of even seeing a legal bull is tough, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, like the first year I went, I took, you know, a really nice spotter and just didn't use it that much, you know, because, you know, like you, like if I was within 500 yards of an elk, like I can pull my binoculars up pretty quick and know if it's legal or not. And if it was legal, we were going to go after it.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep. Makes sense. So I can see where optics would kind of play a role into like what you're going for, where you're hunting, how much cover is there. Cause I'll be honest, where I hunt in Iowa, there are some times where I'm on the glass quite a bit, but then most of the time I'm in the thickest shit on the farm and I don't even use my binoculars. They're on me just in case, but I don't use them. And so you don't even, there's certain scenarios where you may not even need them. Right. And so, what other products or I guess just when you make your decision on purchasing, what are other things that you're thinking about before you pull the trigger?
I mean, now with kids, I'm looking at longevity, like, hey, is this something that I can pass down, you know, in a couple of years to one of the kids? You know, some things you can, some things you can't. I also I like to research online just like everyone else does. But when it comes to, you know, your higher end gear or I guess it have to be higher end. Like, you know, so if you're going to spend, you know, several hundred dollars on something, I love to be able to go and touch and feel it, you know, and kind of test it out, you know? So, you know, I like to have that option where there might be a pro shop, you know, or a shop somewhere where I can go, you know, kind of verify for myself what I've read online with other people's, you know, reviews and thoughts on things.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So do you ever do direct to consumer purchasing?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like my clothing now, I feel like I have pretty dialed in to what I kind of know what I like and what I'm looking for. You know, so I think there's, you know, there's several different companies now where you can do that. I'm trying to think of some of the bigger things I've bought. We talked about boots a little bit. You know, if you would have told me 10, 15 years ago that I was going to spend $500 or $600 on a pair of boots one day, you know, I would have told you no way in hell, you know, but you know, when you go on some of these bigger hunts, you know, it's amazing, you know, what a really, really good pair of boots will do for you. But I would probably never order those direct, you know, to consumer. You know, I'd want to go to a good shop where you can try several different pairs out of several different manufacturers, you know, especially with feet, you know, everyone's foot is just different. You know, I've tried on boots with a buddy of mine right next to me and, you know, one pair that I think is just so comfortable and fits me so well. He tries on and just says, man, that's the most uncomfortable thing I've ever worn, you know? So.
Yep. Yep. Have you recently, or that you can remember in the past, have you ever had a bad experience with a product and you're like, holy shit, this sucks, this product sucks. And then you maybe reached out to the customer service department and they drop the ball or they fix the problem for you?
You know, I've been lucky that any issues I've really had in the hunting gear realm, like I've found that these hunting companies have really like stand behind their product and, you know, have treated me really well, you know?
Yeah.
I own a couple different types of backpacks. I've dealt with two different companies on, you know, a strap breaking or a buckle or anything like that. And like, you know, the biggest thing I found with, you know, with these companies, and it's probably not even the hunting world, it's probably everything. Like, you know, if you just want to be the nasty guy that's going to send the email and send it in, you know, you may or may not be taken care of. But if you take the time to pick up the phone, you know, and call them and just talk to them, especially if you have a couple pictures, you know, to back up what you're talking about. Like most of these companies will bend over backwards, you know, to get you, you know, in the you know, back hunting again, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So,
yeah. What would you say is your best purchase in the last couple of years? Your most favorite, the best piece of gear that you've bought or one you were really excited about using?
Ooh, that's a good question. Man, probably, well, I guess when I went to Alaska 3 years ago, and that was I mostly bow hunt, and that was a rifle hunt. So, you know, I kind of had to outfit myself into a new gun and scope. You know, so I had a lot of fun, you know, kind of messing around with different guns and different calibers and just trying to figure out what was going to be, you know, what was going to work the best, you know, for me in that situation, I guess. I guess the big purchase I'm looking at right now is going, with suppressors.
Okay.
That's the one that I'm kind of currently looking at, you know, like, hey, it's easier to get them now, you know, at least here in Michigan, the wait time is, you know, like cut in half. You can get them in a month or two, it seems like, you know, and just trying to figure out like, hey, if I'm going to go down that road, how far down the road am I going to go? Like, how many do I need to buy, type thing. So,
yeah, it makes a lot of sense, man. I don't know shit about guns other than when you pull the trigger, they go bang, and that suppressors help that bang just are a little bit quieter and less kick. Right.
Yeah.
So that's all I know about guns. Yeah.
But for my Alaska hunt, probably my big purchase that I've just loved, I bought a new pack. I bought, an Exo Mountain K4 bag.
Okay. I've heard good things about that brand. Yep.
Oh man. It's just been amazing. We had an amazing trip. There's four of us and we all tagged out, and shot big caribou. So I mean, we had like eight caribou. So, I mean, I packed meat, lots of meat, you know, for a whole week. And I mean, everything they said that bag was going to do, it did and more. So, that was a good purchase, but that was, you know, once again, like a $700 backpack.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. But like just hearing you talk about your gear, it's going to last you 10 years, 15 years.
Oh yeah. Right?
And so,
for sure.
You know, that's a good deal. If you're the buy once, cry once type. Any other honorable mentions you want to talk about? Like just pieces of equipment that, that you've come to love over the course, or brands that you really enjoy working with, or that you're very confident in their equipment and gear, and that it's almost like you don't even look anywhere else. You just go right to them and you do it every time.
Yeah. So, you know, for clothing, I'm running like two different companies for clothing. For my outer wear, I wear a lot of Sitka.
Mm-hmm.
I've just found that, you know, whether I'm tree stand hunting or I'm crawling around on the mountain, like it's been tough, you know, like I haven't torn it all up. It's been really durable. Yep. And then for like my base layers, I love First Light. I think First Light's got the best base layers out there. So, that being said, I haven't tried a ton of other base layers, you know, also, that's just kind of where I started and I've loved them. So I'm sure there's, you know, some other companies that are doing great too, but, those have just treated me really well. So it's kind of like, you know, base layers, it just kind of seems like, you know, every two or three years, you're going to kind of replace them, you know, based on just, you know, they're getting a little old, or, you know, depending on how much you've worn them. I'll just always kind of replace with the same thing through First Light.
Yeah.
for my archery gear, I've been shooting a Matthews bow for many years just because they've just been good to me, you know, more than anything else. So I've had a bunch of different ones throughout the years, but I would say my last probably three I've bought brand new have been Matthews.
Gotcha.
Trying to think, like, for optics, I've got a pair of Swarovski binoculars that I just love. If I have to sit behind a pair of binoculars all day, you know, those are amazing. For scopes on guns, I've had really good luck with loophole scopes. And that's just one, like, I haven't tried a bunch of either ones also. I did have a Vortex spotting scope that was really good. I had a Viper that was a really good spotter, and I sold it just because I stopped using it.
Yeah. But good reason to sell it.
Yeah.
We're wrapping up here, but do you ever look at secondary markets like Facebook Marketplace or any other location that sells used hunting gear?
You know, I have a little bit. I'm not a Facebook guy, so I really haven't gone down that way. There's a couple like online forums, like Rock Slide and Archery Talk, where I've looked for some clothing pieces like here and there. Lately, it's been more for my kids as they get a little older. Like my 14-year-old son, he's kind of in that weird space right now where he's like grown out of like youth clothing, but he's in like men's size small, you know? And I just, you know, like all my stuff is like large or extra large. So I don't have any of that stuff like laying around. But you know, I also know like he's growing like a weed. So I'm not going to like, in that instance, I'm not going to go spend $1,000 on First Light or Sitka gear, you know, to buy men's smalls, you know, that might only fit him for 1 year or 2 years, you know? So I have been looking, you know, like on the secondary market, like, hey, can I pick up a pair of First Light bibs, you know, for $100 that might fit him for a year or two? Like I'd be fine with spending that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I do know that there is a market for that. I have throughout the year, I've cultivated a pile of hunting gear and equipment, and if I want to sell it, I go straight to Facebook Marketplace or even just mention it on Instagram and someone local will buy it. It's almost really guaranteed. I mean, especially if you have a popular name, like I have a pile of Sitka. It's funny that you said you like Sitka. I have a pile of Sitka that I just don't use anymore. Sure. And it just sits there. It's not necessarily because of the quality of it. It's just, I feel it's really bright in the tree stand. It almost like sticks out like a sore thumb. Anyway, to each their own, right? But,
well, I tell you what, I don't necessarily disagree with you. Like I there's been a part of me that's been like wanting to really kind of test out the new First Light Spectre, mm-hmm. you know, pattern stuff. I think at least in the Midwest, like, especially when the leaves fall off the trees, like, that probably it visually to me, like it looks like it's going to blend in, you know, better than, you know, the Sitka, you know, Optifade stuff,
mm-hmm.
it is a little brighter. Like there has been times where I'm like, ah, man, how can a deer not see me up in this bare tree right now with this?
Exactly. Anyway, that's a long way of saying like, I'm going to sell it here pretty soon. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say hunting gear grab bag, and then I'm just going to put like Sitka, First Light, and a couple other brands, large, extra large sizes, put it in a trash bag and say $100, you know, buy at your own risk, no returns, like or whatever the case is. Mostly because I'm hitting a point now where I have to get rid of some of my hunting gear. Some of the good stuff I actually passed down to my stepdad, and he absolutely loves it because I don't think he's spent money on hunting clothing in probably 10 years.
Right.
It's because I just, all the stuff that I don't want, I just like, if it's good, I just gave him a coat, a couple coats and some pants, what, when I was down there in November, and he got a kick out of it, and he's gotten some trail cameras off of me and things like that. So pass it on to people who could use it. I do that as well. So yep. I think that's it, my man. Adam, dude, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to bullshit with me on this episode, and I'll let you get back to work. Boring, but I'll let you get back to work. I'll let you get back to the snow day. And man, thanks again, and have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Dan.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.